is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, start the season off strong this October with scary good deals of up to $4,000 off the top training solutions from our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Prepare your team for success this preseason with spooky savings of up to $4,000 off Dr. Dish Basketball's shooting machines designed for schools and programs. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hey, this is Scott Morrison, Utah Jazz assistant coach, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, coaches, check out our newest sponsor, Sports Lab 360, an online platform made up of interactive modules that focus on different tactical concepts, from the basics of reading a screen to specific offenses such as the dribble drive. Especially for our high school coaches out there with such limited practice time with your players, assigning the Sports Lab 360 modules to them before practice can save you tons of time from having to stand there and explain these concepts. And you can move more quickly on to the next layer while your competition is still stuck on the fundamentals. As a coach, you can also put customized notes into the players' interactive modules, and you can track how they're scoring on the modules, making it a valuable tool to help identify areas that need development. These guys have had major success in soccer and just recently launched in basketball, and I'd urge all of our listeners to go check them out. Through October and November, you can use the code all lowercase hoopheads to save 15% off any Sports Lab 360 plan. Head over to www.sportslab360basketball.com to check them out. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping out tonight to do some Western Conference over-unders. We banged out the Eastern Conference last week, as we talked about. Jason's playing through a little pain tonight. He had a little encounter with
the... And you know, Mike, and you know, as you're listening to this podcast, it's my birthday.
Happy birthday, man. Happy birthday.
Yeah, well, it's not my birthday all yet, right. But when you're listening to this podcast, and happy birthday in the future.
There you go.
37, Mike. I'll be 37, Mike.
What does that feel like?
Do you remember when you were 37?
Do I remember? It was a long time ago, man. Eons ago. Eons ago.
Cal was one?
Well, let's see. What year were you born?
No, I'm saying you. When you were 37,
that
Mike.
Was 2007. So Cal would have been, I guess he would have been, at this point in the year, he would have been one. He wouldn't have not have turned two yet. He would have been turning two in.
And Madeline was nothing but a glimmer in your eye, man.
That's right. Not around at that point. So time flies. Let's put it that
crazy,
way.
Crazy, isn't it?
That was 16 years ago, man. Crazy. Yeah. I'm an old man.
I was 21.
Yeah, there you go. Big day for you. A lot of excitement.
Not really. But no, it was a pretty lame day for me. Anyways, we'll leave it at that.
All right.
So we're going to start with the Western Conference. We're going to do it the same way we did it last week. It's going to be, we're going to go in alphabetical order, so we can't do any favoritism. I will say before, I know you probably haven't looked at the over-unders at all, right?
I have not glanced at them.
Simmons has not done his over-under pods, so you're not tainted at all. But I'm very intrigued by the Western Conference over-unders because there is a clear number last. There's a clear number one and two. And then after that, everyone seems to be muddled in the same thing. I think Sal and Bill would call it the Vegas zone because nobody can seem to delineate between the two. So we'll talk about that as we go here. So we're going to go alphabetical order. We're going to start with the Dallas Mavericks, the first team in what I would call the Vegas zone. The Dallas Mavericks have added Seth Curry. Dante Exum's apparently still in the league. Rashawn Holmes, Derek Jones Jr., Grant Williams, and they lost Bertans, Justin Holiday, Reggie Bullock, JaVale McGee, Christian Wood. Their over-under is set at 43.5. Like, I'm going to go over. I think they've added more than they've lost. Now, I want to be clear here when I say I don't think they've added a lot, but when I compare, when I make the comps, Christian Wood just seems to, like, wherever he goes, he's not successful in the NBA. JaVale McGee is an old man. I know, was it Zach Lowe who loved Frankie
No, Kevin O'Connor. Kevin O'Connor. Frankie Smokes.
Ken O'Connor. Yeah, Frankie Smokes never has done anything. Okay. Davis Bertans, I mean, that guy, I guess he was an NBA player. But when I see Seth Curry, he's solid. I see Rashawn Holmes, he's averaged a double double in his career. Derek Jones Jr., I mean, he's good for a dunk every once in a while. I think the team's slightly better. I think they're gonna win more than that games because that Luka and the Kyrie dysfunction seems to be tamed for now. Question mark. But I'm gonna go over with a 43.5, Mike. I'm gonna go over it.
Oh, that's a hard no. I'm going under. There's no way. This team, like, I just, first of all, you're completely reliant upon Kyrie Irving as your secondary guy. And relying on Kyrie at this point in his career in any way, shape, or form, even for him to deliver you a chicken sandwich, I wouldn't be looking to be relying on Kyrie Irving.
How about
that
cryptic tweet? Could you rely on him for a cryptic tweet?
You might be able to, but not much. Okay.
Infinity sign.
Okay. Not much beyond that. I mean, you're looking at Dallas is really relying on two rookies, the Olivier Maxence Prosper and Derek Lively, I think are both going to play a significant amount, which when you put two rookies in your rotation, it's probably not the best thing. I just don't think they have enough.
And they're getting influenced by Kyrie, yeah, man. Come on.
I just don't think this team has enough around Luka. I can see situations this season where you're going to get a lot of Luka whining, complaining. And I think at the end of the season, there's going to be some reckoning in Dallas with whether or not Luka is going to stay in Dallas for the long term. Because I just think that they have put a lot of eggs in the Kyrie basket. And when those two guys are on the floor, clearly they're going to be able to score. Those two guys are two of the most creative and efficient offensive players in the league with the ball in their hands. But I just think that what they have around those two guys, there's not going to be a tremendous amount of shooting. There's not going to be a tremendous amount of playmaking. When for sure at some point Kyrie's going to miss games, whether it's because of injury or some other issue, now you're basically down to Luka as your only creator, which I know that's the way that they've played. Maybe that's the way he wants to play, but it's clearly not a way that you're going to win big in the NBA. When you look at how deep the Western Conference is, to ask this team to get to 44 wins, as good as Luka is and as good as Kyrie can be, I don't see them getting to 44 wins. So I'm going to go under on the Dallas Mavericks.
All right. Next pick, the defending NBA champions, the Denver Nuggets. They've added Justin Holiday, Jay Huff, who I don't even know who that is. He played for Washington,
the Wizards, so there you
last
go.
Year, Mike.
So that's why.
The Wizards. Two rookies. They really didn't gain anyone. They lost Bruce Brown and Jeff Green. Those are the two big ones they lost, and I guess they lost Thomas Bryant too. 53.5 is the over-under. They are the high mark in the Western Conference. No surprise. This is a tough one, Mike, because, like, I expect Jokic to play every game or mostly every game. But, like, when I look at it, like, Bruce Brown was huge for them, and they lost him. I think they're definitely not as good as they were last year. And also, they're going to be – they, you know, Luka in his press conference last week said it wasn't a long enough offseason. He's still recovering, whatever that means. Like, I don't know. 53.5 seems like a lot to go with. I mean, it's hard for me to say under because I think they're the best team in the West. But would I be surprised if they lost some games that they should win because they're just – it's the, I don't want to say sophomore slump, but they're still got the lingering stench of the victory in the NBA championship. And, you know, sometimes, you know, winning a championship and coming off that high might be hard. I'm going to say over, but it's very, I'm saying 54 or 55 wins at most. I think that's where I'm at.
I mean, the league, I think when you look at it as a whole and you look at the Western Conference, I mean, it's loaded. I mean, you're not going to have easy games because, again, in the Western Conference, I think you can make a pretty compelling argument that there's nobody that is blatantly tanking or trying to lose games. Everybody's trying to win. And I think as we get to the bottom half of the Western Conference, we're going to see that these teams that – in the past couple of years have been doormats. These teams are going to be competitive this year and you're not going to have easy games. And yet I do think that Denver has to be the favorite in the conference. And it's hard to see if you think they're going to win the Western Conference, it's hard to see a team winning a Western Conference and winning under 53 games, right? I mean, you're talking about they're going to win 53. I think they're going to win more than that. There's some wild cards here with Denver. One is, as you mentioned, Bruce Brown. They're relying on Christian Brown and his improvement. They think he's going to kind of fill that six-man, jack-of-all-trades role, which he did sporadically at times. And he had a couple good games in the playoffs, but asking him to do it over the course of an 82-game season and then be a hugely important cog in what they end up doing in the playoffs, I think has to make you wonder. I think you always have to be worried about the Michael Porter Jr. injury situation and what his back is going to be like. Last year, he was able to stay healthy. The year before, he was out the entire season. So his injury history tells you that it's going to be dicey whether or not he's going to make it through the entire season. But then on the reverse side, as you talked about, Jokic has proven himself to be pretty durable. He's obviously not a guy that is flying through the air that is going to risk a lot of stress and strain on his knees because he's flying over the rim, so he's likely to stay healthy. And then you also have Jamal Murray back from – he's now 2 years removed from his ACL tear. He's coming off a playoffs and NBA finals where he was clearly the second-best player on this Nuggets team and one of the probably best five players in the playoffs, a guy who's never made an all-star team, a guy who's never made an all-NBA team. And yet, when you think about Jamal Murray as a playoff performer, it's hard to think. You're not going to name too many guys on the list of people that you would trust in a playoff game before you're going to get to the name Jamal Murray based on what we've seen from him. So, again, putting that knee injury even further in the rearview mirror suggests to me that he's probably going to have a big year. He's a guy who's probably more motivated than the average NBA champion to have an outstanding, successful individual season in terms of trying to make an all-star game and make an all-NBA team, which are things that he hasn't done in his career, although he has this NBA title now in his back pocket to work with. So I think Denver, although, as you said, they're probably not as deep. I know they have some positive feelings about some of their guys coming in off the bench that maybe didn't play very much last year, and they think that they can be contributors, Christian Brown among them. And I think they like Peyton Watson is another guy that didn't play very much last year that they feel like has the potential to get some more minutes. So I like Denver's over. That's a bet on Jokic playing 70 games. It's a bet on Murray wanting to excel in the regular season because, again, he hasn't really achieved those milestones in his career that are regular season achievements. So to me, when you have those two guys operating at full tilt, and I really think that Denver's the best team in the West, and it's hard to imagine a conference champion winning only 53 games, despite how loaded this the league is. So Denver over.
Okay. All right. Next up, Golden State Warriors. There's quite a turnover in Golden State, Mike. So we've got they've added Rudy Gay, Corey Joseph, Rodney Magruder, Chris Paul, Dario Saric, a bunch of other guys I don't know. They lost DiVincenzo, Andre Iguodala, Jamichael Green, Anthony Lamb, Jordan Poole, Ryan Rollins. I don't know who that guy is. Patrick Baldwin Jr.
Ty Jerome, man.
Lots
Ty
of turnover. Jerome
came to the Cavs.
Cavalier, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how much impact Ty Jerome's going to have, but he is a Cavalier, you know. So, you know, here's what I'm going to say. The Golden State Warriors over-under is 47.5. I feel the under on this one, Mike. I listen. Steph's going to miss a few games because of injury somewhere. Klay Thompson's not still the Klay Thompson of old, and you can argue he came back and played pretty solid last year, but he's still not. There's some holes. I don't know. Kuminga hasn't lived up to everyone's expectations. Moody has flashes. Wiggins is Wiggins. I don't trust him. And I haven't heard of Lester Quinones. I don't know who that is. He's listed as a stay. Really? I didn't even know that guy existed. But I just think – I think the Warriors are good, but they're not great. I think it's under 47.5, Mike.
So Draymond's going to be out at the beginning of the season. He's out 4 to 6 weeks right now. So who knows when he comes back, and if he comes back, how healthy he's going to be. As great as Steph is, just like LeBron, every year you get a little bit older, and maybe you're just still at the peak of your powers. Maybe you're not. I think, as you stated, Klay Thompson, all credit to him for coming back from not only a torn ACL, but also a torn Achilles, and playing really well last season. He's not the same guy athletically that he was in his prime, and he's now becoming, again, an older player. So I'm not sure exactly what you expect from Klay Thompson, but you still expect him to be a quality contributor. I think with Golden State, how Chris Paul fits in and what that looks like, and can they use him, and how much are they going to use him, and are they going to start him when Draymond comes back? There's a lot of things to figure out. And it just, when you think about the history of Chris Paul and the Warriors, it still seems very, very odd to watch Chris Paul suit up beside Steph Curry, as opposed to kind of trying to go toe to toe with him. And that, I think it remains to be seen what kind of a fit that will be come crunch time, whether that's crunch time in the regular season or, more importantly, crunch time in the playoffs. And we know that over the last 5 years, Chris Paul's history as a playoff player, if he's going to be an important part of their regular season, it's hard to imagine that he's not going to get injured in the playoffs, because that's been his history over the last 4 or 5 years, where he just has not been able to remain healthy through any kind of lengthy playoff run. So I know the playoff run doesn't impact where we stand on the over and under, but I'm going to go under on the Warriors too. I think they'll probably be right around their number, but I don't see this Golden State Warriors team as being a threat to win 50 games. I just think that their health is going to be shaky, and I don't love their depth, and I don't love the Chris Paul fit on this team. I think when you have Paul, you have Steph, and you have Klay Thompson out there, I just don't know if you're going to be able to match up with some of the more athletic teams in the league, especially some of those younger teams that are going to kind of try to run you off the floor. So I'm going to go under on Golden State. Their number was what again? 47.5?
47.5.
Okay. So we're both under on that one.
Yep.
All right.
All right. Next up, Houston, we have a problem. And his name is Kevin Porter Jr. Anyways,
they have him listed as a stay. I think Kevin Porter Jr. has played his last game in Houston.
Yeah. He hasn't been officially released. Is that accurate?
That is correct. He is not. Because I just don't think that the Rockets are not allowed to release him at this point.
Oh, is he like on the exempt list or whatever?
Well, I just think that as this process works itself out, I don't think at this point they're not, I don't know if legally, but the league.
It's kind of the same situation as the Bridges situation last year.
I just don't think they're not able to release him at this point. I'm sure once they're able to, that they will.
Yep. So in Dylan Brooks, Reggie Bullock, Jeff Green, Aaron Holiday, Fred VanVleet, Amen Thompson. Out. A bunch of DJ Augustine, Willie Cauley-Stein,
Frank Kaminsky. Ty Washington.
A bunch of nonsense. Like, these guys aren't. Kaminsky's not even on a roster.
Okay.
I mean,
what's the number? So, what's Houston's number?
31.5, Mike.
31.5. Okay.
I feel like this is an over. I feel like this is an over, Mike.
Okay.
I mean,
make your case. You can't make your case.
You can't go. Here's my case. You can't go and sign Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet and then pick Amen Thompson, who's probably a top five, like top three chance to win it. Rookie of the year, right? We were talking about this last week. It was the Thompson twins were 2 and 3, and Wembanyama is number one. Like, you can't have all these players on this roster that you're paying a ton of money to and win 30 games. I'm sorry. Houston Rockets over 31.5. It just can't happen. I don't know that I feel good about this, Mike, but I just can't see that this semblance of a roster is at least, you know, they've got like three guys that I would kind of enjoy watching playing basketball. Like, I like watching Fred VanVleet play. Is he great? No. Like, is he like the best player in the NBA? No. But do I enjoy watching his ball movement and his shot? Yeah, sure. Do I enjoy watching Dylan Brooks' antics? At times. Yes, I do. Okay. Is Jalen Green a solid player who I want to see continue to get better? Yes, I do. Do I think Amen Thompson could be good? Yes, I do. This team is almost the theoretical Orlando Magic, Mike. Right? This is like their parallels with the Orlando Magic. And all those years we talked about the Orlando Magic should be better than they are. And then someone gets hurt and then another person gets hurt. And then, like, I think theoretically this team could play for a play-in tournament. Do I think they will? Probably not. But do I think they win more than 31.5 games? I think so. So I'm going over, Mike. I don't know if I've convinced you or not. I can't tell. You tell me.
All right. So here's what I would say. What has been the reputation of the Houston Rockets over the last several years? That they are completely...
Dysfunction.
Yeah, dysfunction. They don't resemble an NBA team. They have no buddy steering the ship. You had, what's the Silas kid's name? Steven Silas. Thank you. So Steven Silas.
What do you want to call him?
Paul. I was going to call him Paul Silas. So
R.I.P. Paul.
Sorry.
R.I.P.
Anyway. Okay. Yes. Anyway. So you bring in Ime Udoka, who during his one season in Boston obviously had some issues, but I think proved himself to be a pretty good coach who ran a pretty tight ship. And I think that's exactly what these young guys –
except for himself.
Yeah, except for on himself. But I think that's exactly what these young guys need. So you look at, okay, the guys that they brought in, Fred VanVleet, clearly a guy who is a veteran, love his game, hate his game, whatever. Clearly a guy that can be a tone setter for that team. Dylan Brooks, I may not like the tone that he sets. He may have a lot of flaws, but he's still a guy who – plays hard and competes. And if you can rein him in And it feels like Ime Udoka would be a guy that could rein him in. And you get the best of Dylan Brooks, then you're getting a pretty good player. Reggie Bullock, a lot of experience playing in Dallas, playing in playoff games, playing off Luka, guy who can shoot it, good player. Jeff Green, been on a million teams. Is he a guy that's going to play 35 minutes for you? No. But is he a guy who can fill in when somebody gets hurt or a veteran presence in the locker room, a guy that does good things? Makes complete sense. You look at their young guys, and they just have – I mean, you can just go down the list. Jalen Green, Şengün, Jabari Smith, Tari Eason. I mean, these guys are guys that lots of teams around the league would love to have on their roster. And then that says nothing about Amen Thompson and how good potentially he can be. So to me, I think this team makes a lot of sense with the young guys that they have, with the veterans that they added, and then with the new coach instilling a different type of culture with the support of Fred VanVleet and I guess theoretically Dylan Brooks. But I think that if you're those young guys, at some point, yeah, you want to get your own, and you, those guys haven't been paid yet. They're big money contracts, they're second contracts. But still, I think that you're at a point where you've been in this dysfunctional environment where you're just losing. And these guys have come up in the game, I'm sure, winning a lot of basketball games. And to go in there and lose for a year, 2 years, 3 years in some cases, I just don't see that happening. I think that Houston, to me, this is an easy over. I think Houston wins. I think they win in the high 30s. I think they win in the high 30s.
So you're thinking they're competing for a theoretical, could be competing for a play-in
tournament. Yeah, I think they're in the, I think they're in the mix. I mean, I think a lot, I think there, when we go through this, there's going to be a lot of teams that are in the mix for that play-in tournament. And I think Houston's going to be one of them. I think they easily surpass 31.5.
All right. The next pick, the Los Angeles Clippers. Now, before I do this, Mike, I want to ask you, who do you think has a higher win total, the Clippers or the Lakers, based on DraftKings?
Well, I mean, I'm guessing that it's...
I'm not asking you to make a...
Are you asking me which one I would do? Or, I mean, I'm guessing it has to be the Clippers because conventional wisdom would say it should be the Lakers. So I'm guessing it must be the Clippers.
No, it's the Lakers. It is the Lakers.
Okay.
But it's only by one game.
I mean, the Clippers, the only answer over to that under, is... Go ahead.
The Clippers over-under is 46.5. The Lakers over-under is 47.5. I don't see a world... I'm not all about the Lakers, okay? I don't see a world that the Clippers get the 46 wins. Because Kawhi Leonard's playing, what, 35 games this year again? Like,
he's healthy.
Him and Zion are competing to see who plays more games this season.
Him and Paul George They played in the preseason opener together in a preseason game.
Their roster has not changed at all, except for they added Josh Primo and lost Eric Gordon. Everything else is – listen, I'm not buying it, Mike. I'm not a used car lot. They're not selling it to me. They put sawdust in the odometer. There's no way.
Under.
You're telling me that they're going to win 47 games in the West? Come on now. Give me a break. Under.
Under. I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. You're talking about if you're going to take the over on this one with as many good teams as there are in the Western Conference, then you're telling me that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are going to each play 60 games. If they each play 60 games, then I think the Clippers could get to that number. The odds of those
two
guys
60
playing,
games at the same time.
No, just not 60 games. Games at they the same time. They don't have to play 60 at the same time, but if they each play 60 games, I think the Clippers would get to 46.5 wins. But the odds of that happening, they haven't done it, I don't think, since they've been in Los Angeles. They're a year older than they've ever been, and I just don't see where this team, without those two guys playing an inordinate number of games, has what it takes to be able to win in this Western Conference 47 games to get to their over. What's Russ going to do? How does he fit in? He looked good in the playoffs last year when, again, he was really the only guy that could do anything. Now, if you put him back in, you put these other guys back in the lineup, do you have a similar situation that you had with the Lakers where now suddenly he's not doing the things that he does well? And I don't think you can win when Russ is your main ball handler, which is probably what he's going to end up being when these guys sit out a lot of games. So, look, the analysis of the Clippers is very simple. If all those guys are healthy and playing at their best, this team's a threat to win the Western Conference. However, they're not going to be playing all the time. History will tell you that the odds of them remaining healthy throughout the regular season and into the playoffs to be able to have a sustained run at an NBA championship just isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen. These two guys are not going to play 60 games. The Clippers are not going to win 47 games in this Western Conference under on the Clippers.
All right, I'm going to continue this. There's no way that the Los Angeles Lakers get the 47 and a half wins, Mike. I'm saying this now. They're under. They're not. LeBron is not going to play. How many games is LeBron playing this year? Is he going to play 60? Is he going to play 70? Like, I know it's all about. He is officially the oldest man in the NBA, as it was put out by the Lakers Twitter account. And then he dunked it like a ridiculous dude he did. But I just can't buy that him, Anthony Davis, are going to stay healthy. I can't. Like, LeBron's going to miss games, obviously, because they're going to rest him. Not national TV games, though, because he's going to get fined if they do that. So he's going to rest other games, like the game against Portland that's not going to be on national TV. He's not going to play in those games. There's just no way. You look at his roster turnover. It's a huge roster turnover for the Lakers. They got Jackson Hayes. Yeah. Christian Wood. Once again, not done anything. Cam Reddish. Taurean Prince. Listen, Gabe Vincent. These are all nice pieces. But there's no one great there. Like, no one says, I'm going to help your team get better. Okay? They got Scottie Pippen Jr. on their roster. He's probably worried about Michael Jordan and his mom. Like Michael Jordan Jr. and his mom or whatever is going on over there. Okay? You lost Dennis Schroeder, who was arguably the best player in the MVP. And like Tristan Thompson, I mean, you lost that guy.
He might be starting for the Cavs.
Muffin on defense.
He might be starting for the Cavs.
They lost Lonnie Walker. Like, I just don't see how this team has 47 and a half wins. I think they're under as well, Mike. I just don't buy it. I think this team is slightly above 500. I don't see a world that they get the 48 wins in this Western Conference again.
All right, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
All right, so let's say that they end up with 44, 45 wins, but they go into the playoffs with this roster healthy, and you have a healthy LeBron.
I'm afraid of them.
Yeah, you have a healthy
100%. 100%. I'm 100% afraid of them. 100%. But once again, this all goes back to the same thing when it comes to the Golden State Warriors. They're worried about the playoffs. LeBron has been worried about the playoffs since 2011. Like, his whole end game since the Heat, 2015. When his 4 years in Cleveland, he always said regular seasons, you know, we're trying to get calibrated and stuff, but there was a different switch. That's how he's always operated since, you know, 2015, really. Like, I honestly believe, like, this team, could it win the West? I think it could. I think this team could win the West if everyone is healthy as it's currently constructed. I genuinely do think they could. It's a could. It's not a will. It's not a should. It's a could. I would be afraid of them, Mike. 100%. If they are healthy and everyone on their roster is healthy, I would be afraid of them.
This is
Austin
the
Reeves. Austin Reeves is a big piece of this, though. Like, I thought he played great in the FIBA thing, and he wasn't even starting. Like, he was a lot of games, and I think he ended up starting near the end, but like, he's a huge piece of this. And if he continues to grow and play, and they let him facilitate, like I think they're going to, I really think the Lakers could be dangerous in the playoffs if they're healthy and the roster is there together.
The Austin Reeves development part of it is critical. I mean, he has to be a clear third best player on this team, a guy that they can give the ball to. And it certainly seemed in last year's playoffs and then on into FIBA that he was capable of growing into that role.
Is he the best? Is he potentially, I want you to think about this. Is he potentially the best no name to something that LeBron has ever played with?
I mean,
like when you think of all LeBron's, I mean, Dellavedova was a good defender, but you would never classify him as someone that you would say that he was like close to a superstar. Like,
I mean, Reeves came out of nowhere, right? I mean, you're talking about there's been other guys, role players that provided things.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, is he the best from nowhere to somewhere player that LeBron has ever played with?
I mean, I can't think of another guy.
I
would probably say yes. I mean, he's probably, when you look at and project what he potentially can do as a primary ball handler, as a guy that has the ball in his hands, I don't think there's anybody that has come up under LeBron's wing that is going to be able to reach the heights that Austin Reeves theoretically can. So, yeah, I guess I would say the answer to that is yes, just off the top of my head. I think the big thing with the Lakers, it still comes down to, we've had this conversation since LeBron first went to the Lakers. So it hinges on two things, right? It hinges on LeBron's health, and then it hinges on Anthony Davis and can he be the guy. We're at a point now where, what we've been saying it since he went there, that AD is going to be the guy and LeBron's going to end up being the secondary. And it's just not going to, it's just not going to happen. That is not going to be.
He said it in the press conference. AD is the face of the franchise.
It's just not going to happen. And it's not going to happen. I think at one point you thought, well, it's not going to happen because LeBron is going to stay at a certain level. I just think that Anthony Davis, if he's your best player, I just don't – he's a really good second-best player, a really good second-best player. And what he does defensively when he's healthy, might be the most impactful defender in the entire league. He certainly was probably, if not the best defender, right there in the playoffs last year as the best defender. And yet, sometimes offensively, he just is not necessarily as consistent as you'd like him to be. His shot has kind of abandoned him. He really hasn't shot the ball well since the bubble season. And so – this team as a regular season team with the injury history of Davis and the age of LeBron and then what they have around those guys, again, a lot of pieces that fit really well when those two guys are on the floor, a lot of pieces that I don't love nearly as much when one or both of those guys is not in the Lakers lineup. So I think as a regular season team, I don't like this team nearly as much as I like them in the playoffs if they're going to be healthy. Because over the course of 82 games, health is going to be an issue. In the playoffs, either they're going to be healthy or they're not. And if they are, I think they're a threat to win the Western Conference. If they are not healthy, then whatever. They're going to go out early. And that's, I think, there's nothing new there. There's nothing new there. It's been the same story for the Lakers since LeBron got there. Their health is everything going into the playoffs. So I'm going under on the Lakers as well.
All right. We're agreeing a lot in the Western Conference so far, Mike.
We are.
By the way, these are all people in the Vegas zone for me, by the way. Like, all these teams, so Clippers, Lakers, and then the next four teams are all in the same area.
Yep.
Okay, so we have Memphis at 45 and a half, Mike. Okay. We got no real big roster turnover. They added Derrick Rose and they added Marcus Smart. They lost Dylan Brooks and Tyus Jones. They're also without John Morant for 25 games. Now, I guess theoretically Marcus Smart could somewhat fill that void, but offensively he's not going to fill the void. Where does this team get offense?
Bane.
Like initiating offense, Bane and Brandon Clark?
Brandon Clark's out for the year. I don't think he's coming back because he tore his Achilles at towards the end of last season.
So that's right.
He's out. I mean, with this team, right, it comes down to two things. It comes down to what is Ja? Where is Ja? What is Ja? Has Ja's career been compromised? Is Ja going to come back and take things seriously? Is he getting his head screwed on straight? Where is he? Where is this guy as a human being? Where is he as a player? Where is he as a teammate of these guys on the Grizzlies roster? I think until you can answer that question, you're just kind of speculating and guessing about what Memphis's long-term future is. Ja has to be Ja in order for this team to be able to reach their potential. And then I think the second thing is, how much do you believe in Jaren Jackson Jr. as a second banana? I think I have a hard time.
I saw him in the FIBA, and that wasn't anything that I'm to write home about.
Right. I have a hard time. Look, he's really good defensively, despite the fouls. He's a guy clearly you want on that end of the floor. On the offensive end of the floor, he's a lot less consistent. This team just looks totally different when you either plug Ja in or take Ja out. You plug Ja in at his best and you take away all the shenanigans, and this team, I think, pretty easily gets past that number without him, or with a guy that is not on the same trajectory that everybody anticipated for him because of these off the court issues. Suddenly this roster looks a lot different without the dynamic playmaking and scoring of Ja Morant at the top. So I think I'm going under on Memphis. I think there's a lot of good teams in the West. I think a lot of these teams are, I think there's going to be more wins at the bottom of this conference that are going to take wins away from the top, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I also am going to go slightly under her, Mike, slightly under. All right. The next team, the Minnesota Timberwolves, they've added Troy Brown. Shake Milton. That's the only big names. And then they lost Taurean Prince and Austin Rivers. And I don't even know if Troy Brown is a big name. The other guys I've never really heard of. Here's what I'm going to say. I think this is all going to come down to, once again, Anthony Edwards' growth. And listen, unlike Jaren Jackson Jr., if you're a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, you have to be encouraged by what you saw out of him at FIBA. I thought he played really well overall. Obviously, he had the one game that he did not play very well, but the rest of the time, I think he was pretty solid. The question remains, can Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns coexist on the floor at the same time? Anthony Edwards continue to take the next leap. And ultimately, Minnesota's win total is 44.5. I feel way better about them going over than I do Memphis going over. So at 45.5, I feel like Minnesota, I'm going to say it, Mike. I think they're going to have them going over 44.5. I really think if you're the Minnesota Timberwolves, you're encouraged by Anthony Edwards' growth. The roster hasn't really, like I said, roster hasn't really changed, but I feel like another team, a year for this team, you got to remember last year was their first year under this coach. So year two, the offense should theoretically be better because they've run it. And I just like Minnesota, and I want to root for Minnesota. They're kind of the Cleveland of the Western Conference. Like, they don't have, they're, no one's going like, I want to go to Minnesota. Okay. They're not doing that. So like free agent signings, not going to happen very often. So I'm going to go over for Minnesota.
I think if you're betting on the Timberwolves and you're thinking about the over, you're clearly thinking about Anthony Edwards taking another step forward towards becoming one of the 10 best players in the league. Is that possible? I think it's certainly possible coming off of FIBA and coming off the role that he played on that team. I think the next step for Anthony Edwards is, can he make other guys better and not just do his thing, which he's already very, very good at, but can he make these other guys better? Last year, Towns is out. the majority of the year with that calf injury, comes back at the very end, played at the very beginning of the season. And so they never really got a whole lot of time to experiment and do different things with Gobert and Towns together on the floor. Despite the flaws that Karl-Anthony Towns has, the fact remains is that this guy's a multi-time All-NBA player who, as the self-proclaimed best shooting big man of all time, whether you agree with that claim or you disagree with it, he's clearly a guy that has an offensive skill set that not many guys at his size in the history of the league have had. I don't love Karl-Anthony Towns as a player. I'm not sure that he's a guy that you can count on in huge moments. He hasn't really proven himself to be that. But I do think that when you plug a guy that has that kind of talent back into a lineup, there has to be a way to make it at least semi-workable with him and Gobert. And then you figure out how to get Anthony Edwards into space and still have those two guys on the floor. It'll be interesting to see what Chris Finch does. I know that he has a great reputation around the league as being a good, solid NBA coach. And so I think you put all those factors together, and I think I'm with you. I think I'm going to go over. I think when you add Towns to the team that they had last year, that's a big-time talent to add back into your lineup. And if those guys can stay healthy, having a whole training camp together, getting a chance to look more at, okay, what are some different options that we have? What lineups can we play? How can we design this offense differently to be able to take advantage of what each of those guys do well and keep those two bigs on the floor together? I just think plugging in a guy with Towns' talent has to be additive. And maybe there's a chance it's not, but I'm betting that it is. And so I'm going to go over on the Timberwolves.
Hey, Hoopheads Nation, whether you're a beginner basketball player looking for a place to start or a seasoned vet looking to level up your skills, I want to tell you about your new go-to secret weapon. It's called Train. Train is a basketball training and education platform that gives you on-demand access to premium basketball courses created by expert coaches and trainers from around the world. Want to get better at blowing by your defender? Learn setup drills with NBA and international pro trainer Marius Williams, or how to use the punch drag with NBA trainer Kerry Darting. Looking to level up your catch-and-shoot skills? Practice space shooting workouts with former lead female trainer for Kobe Bryant's Mamba League, San Dixon. Or if you're just starting out, learn the basics of shooting and finishing at the basket from international champion, three-time Romanian Player of the Year, and Train co-founder, Vlad Moldovanu. Train has 32 and counting actionable, expert-led, on-demand basketball training courses that teach you exactly how to improve your ball handling, shooting, attacking, and more. For a limited time, Hoopheads listeners get 35% off monthly, annual, and lifetime plans. Just go to gotrainbasketball.com/hoopheads to learn more and sign up for a free 7-day trial.
All right. All right. The team you've been waiting for, Mike.
Ready.
The New Orleans Pelicans.
I'm ready. What's their over-under?
Once again, well, hold on. So we've gone 46.5 for the Clippers, 47.5 for the Lakers, 45.5 for Memphis, 44.5 in Memphis, or Minnesota, and New Orleans is 44.5 as well. Okay. They have added Cody Zeller, I guess.
Nice pickup.
They've lost Jackson Hayes, Willie Hernan Gomez, Josh Richardson, and Garrett Temple. All serviceable NBA players. Not great, but I mean, they can do something. I think the biggest omission to this is in Zion Williamson? Question mark. All right. So we're going 44.5, Mike. I'm going to join the Zion and Pelicans hype train a little bit here. Now, I want to be clear here. I still don't know if he's going to play 250 games, but I'm going to say this. I'm liking what I'm hearing. I'm liking what I'm seeing. Keep him away from the buffet. Keep him away from a specific type of lady. Keep him away from the nonsense. And this team is an over. So I'm going to go for it. I'm going to say over. Now, if Zion does not play 40 games this season, it is an under. Can I make that qualification with this specific team specifically?
You can.
So that's if Zion does not play 40 games this year, it's an under. But if he plays 40 games, I think the team could win 5 of the games he doesn't play in. So I'm gonna say over, contingent on him playing half the games.
This team with Zion is a formidable team. I mean, they were out in front in the Western Conference when he got hurt last year. And when you think about Brandon Ingram being your secondary scorer, you've got Herb Jones, although Trey Murphy got hurt, which I think is definitely going to hurt them. I know he had a knee injury, but I believe he's expected back at some point during the season, but clearly a setback for them with him. CJ McCollum, pro's pro. Valanciunas is what he is. I say it every time when we talk about Zion, when that guy's been on the floor, he's been historically great. I mean, there's no way you can argue with the numbers of what he's done when he's been on the floor. So if he's on the floor and you're being led by a player who's historically great, that usually portends pretty well for your team. And I just like these other pieces.
Jen Hale, they're reporting that Trey Murphy hopes to return around the end of November to early December.
So there you go. Just like with Memphis, like I like this team when Zion is plugged in there. I don't like it nearly as much without that. Not that it's a surprise that I like the team a lot better with a generational superstar, but this team and this roster makes a lot more sense when you plug Zion in there. And I just think about how excited we were when this guy was going to play his first game and we first got to look at him in summer league, and he was just such a phenomenon. And it feels like he's been in the league forever, and yet it still feels like he's young and almost a complete unknown just because of the limited amount of games that he's played.
He played tonight, Mike, by the way. He played in the preseason tonight. He played 15 minutes. You want to guess his stat line?
I'll say he was 6 for 7 from the floor, 3 for 4 from the line. Give him 15 points and 4 rebounds.
12, 5, and 5. 12 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists in 15 minutes. 4 of 8 from the field. 4 or 6 from the line.
Bad day from the field for Zion.
No threes attempted.
Look, the guy's great. I mean, when he plays, he's tremendous. And if he plays enough games, they're going to win because he's that good. And he just slots all these other guys into positions that make a lot more sense. And look, they're going to have to figure out if him and Ingram, if Zion stays healthy, can him and Ingram as a pairing hold up on the defensive end of the floor if you're talking about trying to win a championship. But this team with Zion in a regular season is going to win a lot of regular season games if Zion plays. So I'm going over on the Pelicans.
All right. Oklahoma City in the same exact spot as the Pelicans and the Minnesota Timberwolves. With 44.5, they have added. I'm going to add Chet Holmgren. It's he's stay, but he's really an add. Chet Holmgren, Davis Bertans, Keyonte Johnson. He's the guy who had the heart thing, right? He's the guy from Florida State that had the heart thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Victor Oladipo. They lost. Dario Saric is the only thing they lost that was part of their. This team is going to be good, Mike. I think I'm going to enjoy watching this team play. I don't think they're going to be great. I think it's going to be good. Josh Giddey, good. SGA, good. Chet Holmgren, ceiling is high if he stays healthy. I like this team. I do. 44.5. Here's what I'm going to say. I took the over on Minnesota. I took the over on New Orleans, 44.5. I'm going to take the over in Oklahoma City, and I'm going to get two of the three correct. I'm going for it. I'm saying over. I think it's barely over, but I think this team's going to be good. I really enjoyed watching them play last year. SGA is, I'm still not thrilled that he got the first team all NBA over Donovan last year because I thought Donovan deserved it. But he's a top five or top seven player in the NBA for sure. I can buy into that. And he looked really good in the FIBA. Now, once again, that's not necessarily an indicator that they're going to have a great NBA season, but I surely feel way better about him having a good season than I do about Jaren Jackson Jr. having a good season based on what I saw on FIBA. And I know that's extenuating circumstances. They're not playing with guys they typically play with, but SGA was hardly playing with NBA players, and he looked great. If he can look that good with a younger version of you and me, then, you know, he's going to play well in the NBA. So I'm buying some Oklahoma City stock. I want them to be good because I just really like that. I like Oklahoma City once again because it's a smaller market team. I want them to do well. I want them to succeed. I'm saying over. Mike.
I'm going to go over.
Oh, my God.
We were on a streak of like 10 in a row here where we've agreed. All right, let me lay out the case. I think you did it pretty well. What I'm noticing, though, is if you look at our picks, I'm noticing a trend. And the trend is that we are discounting the older, more established teams and feeling like those teams are going to go under. So we have Golden State, the Clippers, the Lakers. I don't know if Memphis can be considered an older team, but Memphis has been near the top of the conference for at least the last 2 years. And some of these younger teams are where we're going over. I think the case for Oklahoma City is that Shea is now one of the, as you said, 5 to 7 best players in the league. Typically, if you have one of the 5 to 7 best players in the league, that gets you to 40-something wins just in and of itself with one of the 5 to 7 best players in the league. And then you add in the other young pieces that they have, Dort as a defender, Giddey as a secondary playmaker, wing Jalen Williams as an athletic guy that can play both ends of the floor. Chet, we got a little bit of a vision with his game against Wemby the other night where, man, he has the potential to be a guy that is going to be a potential double-double and block shots and be a factor on defense. And if he's that and they end up, it looks like they're going to end up playing him a lot at center, which is going to allow them to space the floor, give him more room for Shea to be able to get to the rim and do the things that he does inside the key. And so to me, I think I look at this team and I say, okay, they're going to try, I think this year, to win as many games with this core, figure out which of these guys off their bench are guys that they want to keep, which guys are they going to invest in. Is Usman Jang going to be a part of their future? Is Poku going to be part of their future? Are these guys going to be guys that they want to keep around, or are these guys that they can look to consolidate and make a trade at some point? I think next offseason is when Oklahoma City takes some of their draft capital and looks for a guy that they can trade for to add to what they'll have in Shea and Giddey and Holmgren. And next year's the year where they really start to compete. But I think this year, this young team, they're going to be hungry. They're going to play. They're going to want to win games. And to me, a team that's hungry is going to play hard and their players are going to play a lot of games. To me, that's the formula for winning in the regular season. I think, again, this team fits that profile. Josh Giddey's not going to be sitting out a lot of games to rest. Dort's not going to be sitting out a lot of games to rest. Maybe Chet does because they're concerned about his injury history. Shea's not going to be sitting out a lot of games. So when you have your best players on the floor and the other teams don't, that gives you a pretty good chance to win. So I'm going to go over on Oklahoma City.
All right. The Phoenix Suns. I might need 10 minutes to read the roster here. The only players staying. We can do that. No. They added Grayson Allen, Azubuki, Kenneth Bates-Diop, Bradley Beal, Bol Bol. Your man, Eric Gordon.
He's worth like four wins right there.
Josef Nurkic, Yuta Watambe, They lost DeAndre Ayton, Bismack Biyombo, Torrey Craig, Terrence Ross, Cameron Payne, Landry Shamet, and Chris Paul.
Chris Paul.
Yeah. So their over-under win total is 51.5, Mike. That puts them at second place in the Western Conference. Now, I had a lot of unders and I had some overs. Okay. I had a lot of unders, though. Okay. On that stretch of the Clippers, the Lakers, Memphis. Golden State. Listen, this roster, when you say I have Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal on the same roster, you're like, man, that's going to be a lot of wins. But then you think about it and you're like, can Bradley Beal even play 25 games without getting hurt? Kevin Durant stay out of his own way and stop making burner accounts? When Devin Booker's the most reliable guy, they've got a concern in my eyes. Like, because Booker's going to play. Like, I feel like last year he missed a few games because he sprained his ankle. But I think historically he's been pretty durable, right? You agree?
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
He's the only one of those three that I trust is going to make a concerted effort to play as close to 82 games as he can. With that being said, the rest of the roster concerns me. Like,
really?
It doesn't concern you?
It concerns me a lot. It concerns me quite a bit.
Like, listen, you know what this roster looks like, Mike, to me?
What?
Take Kyrie Irving off the 2018 Cavs, okay?
Well,
the only difference is you've got three
point guards. There's no point guards on this roster.
The 2018 Cavs had LeBron and Kevin Love and then nothing else, right? Agree. Like, okay. I mean, he was basically dragging corpses to the NBA Finals. Let's be clear. And that's no slight at some of the players on that roster. I just want to be clear here. But it wasn't a very, like, good roster. This roster rivals it. Now, luckily, they have three big kahunas. Unfortunately for them, one of those big kahunas hasn't played a full season in a long time. Looking at you, Bradley Beal. Listen, I'm under on this. I can't. Would I be surprised if they somehow got over? No, because theoretically, these three players, if they were to all play 60 games, they shouldn't. If they're all three playing, there's not many teams that they should lose to. If they're all three playing. In my opinion, there's not many teams teams should lose to. But I don't have any faith that they're going to play that many games together. I just don't. Like, something's going to happen.
And at some point, you got to get some stops. At some point, you got to get stops. I mean, you have to.
I mean, they're going to have to score. They're going to have to score 140 points a game, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And they might do it. I mean, as you said, if those three guys are healthy, good luck trying to guard him. I mean, all three of those guys.
How many minutes is Bol Bol playing for this roster, Mike? He's got to get some time.
You would think. I continue to be amazed that there must be something behind the scenes with this dude that doesn't come out. Because when you watch him play, I just don't understand how, if you're a team and you see what he theoretically
listeners, for getting the Mike Bol Bol. I don't know which one of Mike's takes.
I just don't understand. I don't understand why you wouldn't invest in a guy that has his skill set and his size. Like, why wouldn't you want a guy like that on your roster, somebody that you could develop? The skill level that he has at the size he has, it doesn't make sense to me why an NBA team wouldn't want to invest time and resources into a guy that has his skill set. There has to be something that is not public that makes this guy kind of float around to different rosters. Cause when I watch him play, the talent level is clearly there. And I just don't get why teams don't put more stock in him. Now, look, how much is he going to play for this team? Who knows? I mean, I think you're going to get basically a revolving door around those three guys if they're all healthy, until they figure out who can play with them, what kind of players they need next to them. Are they going to go just strictly five offensive guys? Are they going to fill those spots with Okoji, who's more of a defensive player? I don't know what their strategy is going to be. Maybe Nasir Little ends up playing because he can be a front court defender and guard multiple positions. I don't know what's going to happen. What I do know is that this team's going to score when those guys play, but I also know that they're not really going to stop anybody. And maybe that means in the regular season that they win a lot of games, but I think in the playoffs, you got to be able to at least play some defense. I think you look at Denver last year and they were thought of as an offensive team. And yet I think they ended up in the playoffs. They ranked pretty high defensive wise. And I just don't know if this Phoenix roster has that in them. I think they're going to score a lot. I think they're going to probably be a fun team to watch just because they're going to put up numbers. But Bradley Beal hasn't proven that he can stay healthy. Durant has missed 20 games, I think probably in the last couple seasons with various injuries. And he's another year older. The Achilles tear is a little further in the rearview mirror, but nonetheless, it feels like he gets some kind of injury every season. And this team is not built to withstand an injury to any one of those three guys. And I don't see this going best case scenario for Phoenix. That's not how I see the season playing out for them. So I am also going to go under on the Phoenix Suns. So we're agreeing again. We got to disagree on something here.
All right, here we go. The Portland Trailblazers. They've also got a big influx on their roster. DeAndre Ayton and Malcolm Brogdon. Scoot. Oh, they added Moses Brown. Robert Williams. Obviously, they lost Dame, Nurkic, Cam Reddish, Nasir Little. Their over-under, Mike, is 28.5. The lowest in the Western Conference.
That's probably fair, right? Because they're the only team probably that is, I don't want to say trying to lose, but they're the only team I think that is in a position where they don't mind losing. I don't think they're actively going to try to tank. I think honestly with this roster, they could be way better than what
I think, might think. Mike, you're hitting the nail on the head here. Is this the Utah Jazz of last season? Is this the team that no one has winning anything? And then they come out of nowhere and they back their way into a possible play-in. I don't think they're that good. But if you remember last year, and if we were a sophisticated podcast, we would go back to our conversations about the Utah Jazz over-under and both of us saying that they were going to be pitiful last year. I'm sure we both had them as pitiful.
Yes.
Like yes. the bottom of the Western Conference. And then they managed to be the best team in the Western Conference for a month or so, and then they came back to earth a little bit. But still, could this team be that team, Mike? Is there a chance? I'm not saying they will.
Yes.
Is there a chance?
Yes.
100%. And so if that's the case, you've got to at least consider going with the over here. 28.5 is low. Like, I understand if you're Portland, you're probably not favored in many games to start the season, right? Like, you're favored against the Wizards. You're probably favored against the Spurs at home. Maybe Charlotte and a few of the other bottom Eastern Conference's team at homes. Everyone else, you're not favored. Okay. I'm going under, Mike, just because, like you said, I don't think they're actively going to tank, but I just don't think they're that good. They don't have a clear star on their team. I mean, DeAndre Ayton is not a star. He's making a lot of money, but he's not a star. Brogdon? Could Brogdon maybe be rejuvenated here? Because he kind of wasn't himself in Boston, in my opinion. I know he got hurt. Could he possibly get rejuvenated? Maybe. I mean, the closest thing they have to a star is I can't put it on Scoot already. Like, Shaedon Sharpe and Anthony Simons. Like, Anthony Simons has some pretty sweet dunks. Like,
I mean, could Shaden Sharpe develop into that? Sure. Anfernee Simons is a good player. I don't think Anfernee Simons is ever going to be a star. I mean, Scoot's the star. Scoot's the star of the show.
All I'm saying is this is a stinky one for me. I'm going to take the under, but I don't feel great about it.
All right, so here's what I'm going to say. If you look at their eight-man rotation and you think about teams that have traditionally been the worst teams in a conference, which is kind of what we're talking about here, whether Portland's going to be the worst team in this conference. So Jeremy Grant, good NBA player. Shaden Sharpe, young player that lots of people think have a ton of potential. Anfernee Simons, I don't know what his ceiling is, but the guy scored more than 20 a game. He shot over 40% from three. He's a good player. Matisse Thybul, limited offensively, but one of the better wing defenders in the league. DeAndre Ayton has flaws, but was the number one overall pick. Malcolm Brogdon, rookie of the year, a guy who's played on multiple playoff teams. Robert Williams, guy who was, when he's been healthy in Boston, one of the most impactful defenders in the whole league. And then you have Scoot Henderson, who in a year when Victor Wembanyama isn't in the draft, may have been a guy that tons of teams were coveting and thought could be a franchise player. So those are eight dudes that are like legitimate, good to above average NBA players. I just don't see how that team, if that's the team, if that remains the team, I don't see how this team goes under 28.5. I just don't. Now, could they very easily flip any or all of these guys to contending teams for more draft capital at some point during the season? I mean, you look at up and down that roster, maybe there's not a whole list of teams that want DeAndre Ayton, but there would be a ton of contending teams that would want Robert Williams. There'd be a ton of contending teams that would want Malcolm Brogdon. There'd be a ton of contending teams that would want Jeremy Grant. Now, he has a big contract, but there would still be teams that would want him. Anfernee Simons, maybe not as much because he's not as good of a defender as those other guys, but they have things that they could do, and maybe if they do those things, then the under hits. But I'm going to go over on this 28.5 because I look at that roster, and if that roster remains the same, this does not look like a bottom feeder in a conference to me. This looks like a team that, yeah, they may not be a playoff team, but if this team is the roster and they compete and Chauncey Billups coaches them up, this team could be, I think, better than what anybody expects. I would not be that surprised if they were significantly better than 28.5 wins. I don't know where that puts them, mid-30s maybe. So okay. I'm going over. Hey, a disagreement.
About time. All right.
But I think we both we both made compelling cases.
Yep. All right. Sacramento Kings. Another team in the Vegas zone, Mike. Okay.
Yep.
They added Chris Duarte, Jeremy Lamb. Didn't he just get released? Didn't Jeremy Lamb just get released yesterday? He played a lot of minutes. I feel like he got released yesterday.
He may have. If he did, I didn't see it.
JaVale McGee. They lost Delly.
Nice. As you said, the old man, JaVale McGee.
Rashawn. Listen, I don't know that this team got any better, Mike. Like, when I look at these guys they added, nothing stands out to me. $44.5 million, huh? I really don't know what to say about Sacramento, to be honest with you. I'm gonna go under, Mike. I don't know why. I'm going under $44.5 million.
All right.
I'm going under.
All right. Well, I'm gonna continue our streak of disagreements. I'm gonna go over. And I think my case for going over is, one, I think De'Aaron Fox, he's always been a guy that I've liked. Last year, he took that huge step forward. He won the whatever Jerry West clutch player. And I think if he hadn't hurt his finger there in that playoff series against Golden State, I think they beat the Warriors in round one if he doesn't get hurt. And you're counting on his development to continue. I think you're counting on Keegan Murray as a second-year player to contribute even more than what he did last year as a rookie. I mean, their offense is still going to be really, really good. You got Malik Monk coming off the bench. This team offensively is going to be really good. Now, as you said, they didn't really bring in anything to bolster their defense, but I do think that when I think about Mike Brown and his tenure here in Cleveland, I think of Mike Brown as being a defensive coach. And maybe as they continue to get more experience in his system, maybe the defense steps up just a little bit. And if they continue to have one of the league's five best offenses, which I don't see any reason why they wouldn't if they stay healthy, that this team is still going to be a really difficult team to guard. And if they improve their defense even just a little bit, I think that puts them on track to be able to get above that 44.5 number. So I'm going over. That's mostly a bet on how good De'Aaron Fox is and that Fox Sabonis pick and roll and what they can do offensively. I think in the regular season, I think the way Sacramento plays is going to allow them to win games because they're going to get up and down the floor and teams just aren't going to want to stay with that. And I think Fox is that good. So give me the over on Sacramento.
All right. San Antonio Spurs. The roster hasn't changed very much. They added Chetty. They added Victor Wembanyama. They lost. Okay. They lost Gorgui Dieng. Legitimately the right guy this time.
Good work. That's it. Good work.
And Keita Bates-Diop and Romeo Langford. Here's the thing. I know I sent you the highlights from his game yesterday. Wembanyama, man. The over-under in this team is 29.5. I'm willing to say over just because I think this guy is going to be that good. I think he's that good. Just in that one highlight package in an NBA game that didn't mean anything. Dude, he just looks good. The scoop and under layup he hit, ridiculous. Like, who's stopping that? Who's stopping that? Like,
there's no guy that size that's ever moved that way.
Yeah. Now, there's a big ifs. There's lots of ifs, like big what ifs. Like, if he gets hurt, their season's tanked, obviously. But he's played professionally. So, like, he's been through the he's kind of been through the, like, Luka Doncic ringer a little bit. Like, and, you know, Luka Doncic proved that it can translate in the first year because Luka was great that first year. I just remember telling my dad, I want to go watch, like, the Cavs were terrible because it was the year after LeBron left, right? It was the year LeBron left, Luka came to the NBA. I said, Dad, I just want to go to one NBA game this year. It's the Mavericks game. We went to watch because I wanted to watch Luka. That was the whole reason we went. I just think he's going to be that good. And it's not like the roster around him is like the most terrible thing. Now, do they have anyone that's like amazing? No. But they've got enough. They've got enough guys that they can do something. So I'm going over 29.5, Mike. I'm believing in Victor. I'm believing in Wemby.
At this point, I don't see how you couldn't believe in him as a talent when you think about what he's done to this point in his overseas pro career. You think about his size. You think about his skill set. You think about what he looked like in that first preseason game. There's just never been a guy at that size that moves and does the things that he does. I mean, the amount of space that he covers on defense, the ball handling, the ability to shoot the ball. And the only question with him, and look, we could say this for every single NBA team, every single NBA player, that he's got to stay healthy. And the track record of guys that are this size staying healthy is not great. But at the same time, who knows, right? I mean, we don't know. Maybe he's a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar type of guy that he takes care of his body and he ends up being able to have a long, long career and stays healthy throughout it. Now, Victor's a little bit taller than Kareem, but it'll be interesting to see if he can remain healthy. How many games do you think he plays if he's healthy? I think we talked about this before. Does he get to 50? Is that the goal if he's healthy the whole season? Does he play 50 games?
I think 50.
So if you figure he's going to play 50 games, that means he's going to sit 32. Can in those 50 games, can the Spurs win 25 of them? Can they go 500 during the 50 games that he plays, which is probably what they would need to do if they're going to get above that 29.5. I think the answer is yes. I mean, I think I'm with you. I think he's that good. I think what he does on both ends of the floor, I think the skill set, and I think the Spurs are going to be trying to win games. I think Popovich is going to be motivated to try to win games. I think they're going to want to show this guy right away that, hey, we're the right place for you, and we're not just going to sit back and let our team get their butts kicked every night. We're going to go out and try to compete and try to play. And so to me, that formula of a young team that isn't just sitting back, being complacent, and doesn't care about the regular season, that does not describe the Spurs. So I think this is another case where it's a young team that's going to be hungry to win. And I think Wemby's the real thing. And so I'm going to go over on the Spurs with you.
Oh my gosh, back to agreeing. All right, the last team, Mike, in our over-under journey, the Utah Jazz. The roster hasn't not really much of a change. They added John Collins. They lost Damian Jones, Rudy Gay, and Azubuike, but really none of those guys were big. Listen, their over-under is 35.5, Mike. I've just purely based on last year. I'm gonna say over on this, Mike, because what I've already talked about, they played really well last year. That's another year of them playing together. The only thing is they're not gonna catch anyone by surprise like they did at the beginning of last year. So that would be my concern. Is they're not gonna catch someone by surprise. But I'm gonna go with the over, thinking that they can do it again. 36 wins is not a whole lot. I think they can get there. I'm going over.
All right, if Markkanen's year last year wasn't a mirage, if it wasn't a one-year blip, if really that is now the player that he is, then you have probably a guy who's not good enough to be a number one player on a championship team, but Markkanen suddenly becomes a pretty good player. I mean, he's a guy who maybe he's a poor man's number two or a very good number three, but that's a guy that is a legitimate, really good NBA player. And Walker Kessler was a rookie last year. Now he's got another year in the league. Although he didn't play much for that FIBA team, he still had the experience of being there with those guys. He's going to be a very good player, one of the best interior defenders in the league. I think our guy that we drafted here in Cleveland, Agbaji, I think he's going to end up being, again, not a great player, but I think he's going to be a really good 3-and-D player. And I think he's going to get a lot of minutes for the Jazz this year, whereas last year he was kind of hit or miss in and out of the lineup. John Collins, I think, will be rejuvenated in Utah, and I think he'll play well for them. We know what Colin Sexton is and isn't, but he's a valuable guy to have on your team that can score off the bench. I like this team. I think that we underestimated what they were going to be last year, I think primarily because nobody saw the Markkanen leap coming. And if you take away the Markkanen leap last year, I think this team is probably right where we thought they were going to be. And so I think if you're going to bet the over, you're betting that the Markkanen leap was real, which I think I'm willing to do. And then I think they have enough other pieces around. I think this team's going to be able to score. And I think Will Hardy is one of the best young coaches in the NBA. So I think you combine the returning roster, the belief in Markkanen as a number one guy on a good team. And then I just think that Will Hardy, good NBA coach, guy who's going to make a difference, and this team is going to win more than 35.5 games. I'm going over on the Utah Jazz.
Woo. We did it, Mike.
We did it, man. That's a wrap. So again, I think what's interesting is, like I said 10 minutes ago, is we kind of went under on the established teams and we went over on the up and coming teams. And to me, at least my mindset was, that's a bet on teams that are going to prioritize the regular season more versus teams that are going to prioritize rest and recovery and being ready for the playoff run. So that's why I tended to go over with the young teams and under with the more established veteran teams. So,
all right. So on that note, let's talk about what next week is going to look like, Mike. We're going to talk about MVP. We're going to talk Rookie of the Year, although I think we've already agreed on that one. We're going to talk about who we think is going to represent each conference in the NBA Finals, who is our champion, And then I was going to say we should probably do I don't know if it's to make a in-season tournament prediction.
We got to really look at the groups and stuff. Are we doing our tiers next week? Are we going to do tiers?
Oh, do you want to do tiers? We can do that. I mean, so we have, let's see, when's the first NBA game? I guess I should look at that schedule. Is it 2 weeks from today?
Let's say, like, I want to say like October 24th, 25th, somewhere in there.
Let's see. No game. The 24th, so 2 weeks from today.
All right.
So, let me propose this to you, Mike, and you completely shoot me down or you tell me not. We do tiers next week.
Okay.
And we're talking about this live on the podcast. So, and then the following week we record on Monday and we make our awards predictions before the first games happen.
Yeah, we could do that, or we could record on Tuesday and just kind of see what those first games look like. Who's on the schedule? I don't even have it in front of me. So
it's Lakers Nuggets at 7:30. And then Suns Warriors at 10.
All right. So I think we just play it by ear. We could maybe record on Monday. Let's just kind of see where our week is and how we're feeling. But yeah, I think tiers next week. Okay, so
can we define our tiers for the listeners right now? So we've got contenders, we've got pretenders.
I think last year we did we can win.
Okay. Oh, you got it written down, Mike? Oh my gosh.
Well, I don't have it written down, but I'm just trying to remember. Though there was we can win, there was we think we can win. Then there was now it's getting dicey. I probably have these Poop-fecta? Somewhere in
Poop-fecta, Mike? Yeah.
No. Well, I know the first two tiers have to be we can win and then we think we can win, because I like the we think we can win category. That's a category I enjoy.
One was we can get into the play-in tournament.
Yep.
Or yep. Something about the play-in tournament.
Yep.
And then
We might have had pretenders or fake contenders or pseudo contenders. I don't know. Let's work on it.
Well, I'll let you wordsmith it, because you come up with better ones. But
all right. I
need it before 7 p.m. on next Tuesday, and for me to properly.
All right, I understand. I got you. We'll get that to you. We'll work it out.
Yeah. So right. That's what we have to look forward to next week, everyone. No, we don't. There's no Browns to talk about. Other than, it's not looking good that Deshaun Watson might not play again this week. I'm not feeling good about this.
No, it's not good.
They're going to get murdered anyway. So you may as well sit him out. They're going to, whether he plays or not, they're going to get murdered by the 49ers anyway. So the fact that the 49ers are our 3-point favorite right now is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. What have the Browns done? That could make you think that we have a
great
win.
Defense. We have a great defense, man. We're like the 85 Bears.
So does Dallas. And Dallas got boat raced. Come on.
Okay, well, whatever. It's all good, man. It's all good. Just keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. All right, let's leave it there. That's enough Browns talk. All right, we will be back next week with tiers, and then the following week we will either be on – Monday night or Tuesday night, but then we'll talk about some of the awards and get into some other season stuff. So thanks for listening tonight. We really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.